If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today might be the greatest role player in NBA history. I don't even think that's hyperbole. He's definitely one of the clutchest players in NBA history, and certainly one of the greatest champions in NBA history. He's the only player with seven championship rings who was not part of the 60s Celtics. He is, of course, Robert Horry, Big Shot Rob, also one of the nicest guys I've covered in my career. Rob is co-hosting a great new podcast series called NBA Finals Files. They delve into some of the best finals in NBA history. Next week's episode will be about the 2000 finals between the Lakers and Pacers, a series I happened to cover as a beat writer for the LA Daily News, and thus it's featuring me. How about that? So I'm a guest on Rob's pod next week. Figured it was only fair to have him on the Crossover Pod this week doing the home and home thing. We covered a lot of ground. Nikola Jokic winning his second MVP. Talked about whether the Warriors have what it takes to win it all again. Of course, had to do some Shaq and Kobe stories going back into the archive. And I got Rob to give me his top 5 clutch shooters of all time. I can't think of any better authority on the subject than him. Really fun discussion. Before we get to all that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my chat with Robert Horry is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now pleased to be joined by a man with 7, count them, 7 championship rings. One of the greatest clutch shooters of all time. The only person on earth who calls me Fred, which is not my name, which is okay because people call him Big Shot Bob. And he's not actually Bob, he's Rob. Robert Horry, how are you, sir?
What's up, Mr. Beck? How's everything going?
I'm doing Fred. Well. That may be the first time in the 25 years we've known each other that you actually said, like, Mr. Beck. And or you don't even call me Howard because you just call me Fred. We should explain why you call me Fred.
First of all, let's just start off by saying we've been friends for a long time. And back in the days in the Laker locker room, you know, the whole crew, when y'all would do the big gang bang. And well, that's the technical term, what it's called. You know,
we like to call it a scrum.
It's called a gangbang's
fine.
But, you know, it's fine. You know, when you have a good relationship with people, you have to give them nicknames. And so I just figured, you know, you're a good friend. So I said, I'm going to give you a nickname. I just came up with Fred. I don't know why, but I just said, you know what? I'll just call you Fred.
So I have a slightly different recollection of this while we're on this briefly. Because this was at the Forum, I believe, before you guys had moved to Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
So late 90s. And if I recall, you're sitting at your locker one day, because I could kind of picture where you were in the room. And we were all milling about, which is something that we kind of do. We're all just standing there. And you were kind of like giving a shit for just like, I think, just the milling about, the loitering in pregame locker room.
The solicit.
And I recall you waving us all off as just, we're all just Fred. Eventually just became me because I think I protested it to you and had this discussion with you so that I became Fred. But initially, I think you said we were basically all Fred. Because like, and the way I figured it was like, yeah, a bunch of like white dudes in khakis and bad bad polo shirts. Well, you know, we all just look like Fred, right? Like,
I was trying to make it sound a little bit better. It's like we were like good friends. I gave you a nickname, but now you want to tell the real story. But yeah, you know, I do remember that though. And I was like, man, I'm just gonna call all y'all Fred, you know, because it doesn't, you know, it was fun, man. You know, those were good times, even though we never won anything in the Forum, but it was good times.
The last playoff series there was not a great memory for y'all. All right, we got that out of the way. We discussed the Bob Robb thing on your podcast, which we will discuss in a minute as well. But as I have often said, I don't mind you calling me Fred because it's fun. It's a term of endearment at this point after 25 years. But I have always bristled on your behalf of people calling you Big Shot Bob because nobody called you Bob. You were never Bob Ori.
No.
You were Robert or Rob. And so the Big Shot Bob thing, people love the alliteration. But like, man, it's Big Shot Rob. Like, it's I don't know. That always rubbed me wrong on your behalf. I don't know why.
You know, it all started with my mother. My mother first heard Craig Kilborn call me that on ESPN. She was like, I don't want him calling you Bob. You know, that's your dad. Your name is Robert. He can call you Rob, but I don't want him calling you Bob. And then I just kind of jokingly said that, and he switched it to Rob. And it's been all over. You know, I'm just happy that I got a nickname in the NBA because that is a sign that you have arrived. And for me, you know, you can drop the Rob or the Bob and just say Big Shot because I think, I kind of laugh about it because I think when I meet people and they don't even think they know my real name, they just say, what's up, Big Shot? And it's like, what's up, Big Shot? I'm like, I wonder, do they know my real name? You know, so they just say Big Shot.
I went to your basketball reference page, Rob, and it says Big, so they always have nicknames, many of which are very questionable, but they have Big Shot Bob and they have Big Shot Rob, which like, cool. I'm glad they at least included that one too. Then they have something. They had a third one, the Key Man. What the heck is that?
I don't have a clue. You know, the NBA sends me to China a lot. And I don't know how to say it in Chinese, but it translates to the lucky one. So that's what they call me in China, the lucky one. And I've had a lot of nicknames in college. None of them really stuck. But I think the lucky one is the one that when I go to China a lot is the one they use. So I don't know how to say it in Chinese, but a Mandarin. But it's kind of cool that they call me the lucky one.
Very cool. So the Key Man is just something basketball reference just like made up out of thin air, probably.
You know, all that stuff they just make up. They pull it out of air. You know, just typical Freds doing what they do best.
No, damn Freds. So you and I got a chance to catch up recently on your podcast series, the NBA Finals File series with your co-host Jabari Davis. There are three of those out so far, which people should go subscribe to. The latest this week is on the 94 Knicks Rockets series, a series near and dear to your heart, of course, but one that people often remember as the O.J. Simpson series, of course.
Yes.
Previously, you guys did the 84 Lakers Celtics. You did 2013 Spurs Heat. And coming up, I believe next week, is the 2000 Finals Lakers and Pacers.
Yes.
Featuring me as the guest, reminiscing. This is a really cool series. How many of these How many more of these are you doing? How did you guys decide which ones too? Because like even like 84 Lakers Celtics, I know it's a classic, but like there's obviously a lot of Lakers Celtics to pick from. Yeah. There's a lot. There's three Shaq Kobe Lakers possible. You guys picked the first one. There's a lot of options. It's like, how did you guys decide which ones and how many more are you featuring?
I think we decide by, you know, game seven series or game six series, because for instance, we couldn't do my 95 Rockets in the Finals Cup. We swept Orlando. So you can't really talk about that. We try to talk about iconic people, iconic games. Think about it. You just mentioned, you know, the Heat series. You got LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, you know, going up against Tim Duncan and the Ray Allen shot, you know, those key moments that happened in that series. And the 84 Lakers one was my best, was my favorite, because people don't realize that this was a day and age where they didn't shoot threes that much. Michael Cooper led the league in three-point shooting. I think he only made like 184 or something like that. But they averaged over 110 points a game, each team. And this was, they didn't shoot threes. That shows you how fast-paced, even though it was physical, it was still fast-paced. But, you know, it's just talking about great NBA finals, because there's so many moments that get forgotten about or lost. And, you know, we're just trying to, you know, rehash that and bring it back up. But we're just picking teams. We try to pick dynasties. You think about the, and even though, you know, in Indiana, how Shaq just dominated Indiana, it was a good series. It's the first of the, you know, three championships. And then we talked about the Rockets one with the Knicks cut. You had the two of the best centers there to play the game and the OJ trial. So it's key moments. And so I think that's the pretty much how we pick the ones we choose. And we have a total of, it's going to be 10 episodes. And so we're going to have 10 final series, because they're breaking it down to two episodes per series. So it's going to be, it's fun. So I hope people listen in. Because Jabari Davis, he carries me. He's great. You know how you carried me for years? You know, he's carrying me in this. But, you know, we have a, you know, it's a great time, man. We talk about a lot of stuff that people might not notice. And they can go back and watch these things on YouTube, which is the fun part, and say, yeah, wow, Magic was good. Wow, James Worthy could run. Wow, Larry Bird was a beast. And it's just fun to do these things.
Do you have a favorite one yourself? Like not in your own series necessarily, but I mean, it might be in your series, obviously, but a favorite finals yourself, that was the one, might've been the formative one for you as a kid before you got to the league or even since.
I think for me, going back and rewatching the Warriors Cleveland series and realizing, you know, we all know how good LeBron was, but he was freaking good, you know, and then watching how Steph Curry and how you look at his body type back then and how skinny he was. And now you see how big he is. Now you can see the older he gets, the more mature he gets, the stronger his body gets, and his range gets better and better each year. You know, now he's big and strong. He can shoot from half court with ease. And it's just good to watch the maturation of each guy who goes through the league. You know, even with LeBron, you know, you go from, you know, how he played, you know, just with a reckless abandon to deep down into this, you know, later on in his life, how he played a little bit smarter. Not saying he didn't play with a reckless, but we can tell he played smarter. It's just, it's the maturation process that I like so much.
It's interesting you mentioned the Warriors Cavs, right? So that was like, you know, we had four straight years or whatever where it was like totally predictable. We are now in a moment where things have become, I think, delightfully unpredictable. Like we really yes. don't know. And we're recording this before a couple of these series might get decided by the time this runs on Friday. But it feels wide open right now. And I think it has felt that way the last couple of years. We don't have, like the Warriors are a reigning dynasty because they're still together and they might still mm-hmm. win another one. But other than that, like nobody feels inevitable. And that's been rare, Rob, in the time that you know, your time in the league, yes. my time covering the league, the history of this league really is a history of dynasties. What do you think is happening? Do you like it? It's interesting.
It makes you want to watch because you don't know who's going to win. Because think about it. You know the Bulls were going to win. You know the Lakers were going to win. You know the Spurs were going to win. You had those years, except for 94 and 95, you had no clue who was going to win when Jordan was out, even though I knew who was going to win. But you have these years. It's fun. You know, will Giannis be able to carry the Bucks back to the finals? Will CP3 finally get his ring? You know, will Luka come back from 3-2 and win the series? It's so many things. Will the Miami Heat get their chance to get back to the finals to revenge their loss? it's so many different storylines that you can look at that makes this year fun. And I kind of like it like this, you know, and it's weird because I after we win a championship, my friends that come home, I go home, my friends like, man, we want somebody else to win. Hey, why you want somebody else? I'm your boy. But, you know, it's fun to see other teams win. Now that I'm not playing, it's because it's must watch TV. You think about it, you know, I think watching the game last night, I mean, well, I won't say last night when this aired, but watching the Suns play the Mavs and, you know, tied up 2-2 and how Luka played so well at home and how the story stuff went down with CP3's family, how they were going to come out and come together. And look, they came out and they blasted them. And that's the good thing about NBA basketball. Each and every series is a different story. I'm really excited about the Celtics-Bucks series. To me, that should have been, you know, a Eastern Conference final series that we would all love to watch. But it's just great basketball.
Yeah. I have no idea where this is going. I think it's great that we have no idea where it's going. From what you've seen of the Warriors so far, does this look like a team? Like, Klay's had, you know, kind of a rough go in the postseason, but we've seen moments where Klay still looks like Klay. Steph still looks like he's playing at or near his peak. Draymond looks phenomenal. Some of their young guys have really rounded out. I mean, we talked about, like, as dynasties go, right, they were a great one. Five straight finals, which hadn't happened in the modern era. Three championships. And then we thought, or a lot of people probably thought it was over. How viable do you think? Can they win it all again?
You know, I was one of those people who said, you know, they're done. But I look at Klay. He's a key to that team. And he looks like he's ran into the rookie wall. You think about it, he's been out for 2 years. And he's still, I don't think he's in great shape. Because think about it. You have to be in great shape by the time the playoffs roll in. I don't think he's in great shape. He's in good shape. And I just see that team not as good as it normally is. It's like they're missing something. You know, you have Poole, who's taking a lot of shots from Klay and Steph, which allows them to get their rhythm. And then you got Wiggins, who sometimes is the forgotten guy, all-star, that's sitting over there like, yo, guys, you forget I was an all-star and you're not using me? So I don't – you know, that's the one job in the NBA. It's being Steve Kerr. It's hard, man, because you got Poole, who's emerging as a star. You got to give him his minutes, but they don't seem the same. And then when you go to their bench – the bench is kind of suspect. So it's I don't see them getting back to the finals, but I see them making someone, you know, putting some scare in a lot of people's hearts and minds.
All right. So as we're discussing this, Suns Mavs has not concluded. It may have perhaps by the time this runs. but it sounds like you're leaning Suns, unless you think the Mavs are going to upset them. Like, do you think the Suns are coming out of the West?
I just think the Suns are so good. I think the best player in the NBA that doesn't get talked about now is Ayton. You know, he had a, you know, before, like last night, even though, you know, we keep saying that, he had 20 points, and we don't talk about him, man. He's just so consistent. And for me, if you look at what's happened to him at the beginning of the season, and you notice, Howard, from being around the league for so long, how many guys would have been as professional as he been? I haven't gotten my money. You know, guys around me who went under me, averaging less points, less rebounds. They've all gotten paid. And that's the sign of how crazy and I don't want to say stupid, but how dumb the NBA coaches can be. They don't value big men anymore. They say, oh, no. But yet he's getting 20 and 10 every night, and you don't value 20 points because he doesn't shoot threes. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. 20 points is 20 points, no matter how you get them. And at the end of the day, you just have to get buckets. And he has been so professional. I, you know, that's the first time you see a guy, you just go up to him and give him the man hugs. Like, dude, you know, I applaud you, man, because you're handling your business like a professional and get paid at the end of the season and just do what you need to do. So I still think Phoenix Suns, because of him, are going to get back to the finals. And I don't know if they're going to win it, but I think they'll win the West.
Who are they facing in the East?
Man, Milwaukee. Even though the Celtics are right there, battling them real hard, and I think the Celtics is a great team. And, you know, Horford has turned back the hands of time and played really good. But can he do that consecutive games? I don't think so. I just think Giannis is the hardest playing guy in the NBA. And with his size, his strength, and his athleticism, it's hard to stop him, man, because – he's going to have a bad game like he had last game in order for them to beat them. And he don't have that many of those.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know this. Like, there's kind of this axiom in the NBA playoffs, and it doesn't always hold, but it often does. Like, the team with the best player wins unless, like, their entire supporting cast has collapsed or something, right?
Yes.
And Giannis has a pretty good supporting cast. And, yeah, most series, he's the best guy on the floor. And it's hard to argue against that, and they're the reigning champs, and we haven't really seen any holes other than Middleton's knee, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, I'm really excited to see them play the Heat, though, because I want to see Giannis versus Bam, and you know, that's a good matchup. And we don't talk about classic big men matchups because there's really no classic big men, but Bam is sort of that hybrid big man that can do anything on the floor defensively. So it's going to be a good series to watch those two, you know, match up and see how that fares.
I would expect that you, having been kind of a freak in your time, the you know, one of the early stretch fours at a time that I don't think the term stretched four was even used during your playing days, but like that was you know, tall guy who could do a lot of things with the ball, including shooting from range. You know, you could put it on the deck a bit. I would expect that you love these kind of hybrid evolutionary bigs like Bam and Giannis, KD, like that. That seems like the Robert Horry wheelhouse right there.
You know, it's almost like we always talk about evolution, how someone takes what you did and expand on it. You know, I kind of took what, you know, those guys before me, like Larry Bird and Scottie Pippen and all those tall guys, Magic. Not saying I was as good as those guys, but you take those guys and you try to, you know, emulate them because they're your same size and build. And these guys now have taken everybody that size and expanded on it. And I would have loved to be in this day and era where, you know, for me, we never had to handle the ball. You're like, yeah, kick it up, you know, let Kobe bring it up, you know, let Fish bring it up, let, you know, Vernon or Tony Parker bring it up. And for me, I never really wanted to handle the ball. 2-3 dribbles, I'm pulling up for a jumper, you know, back in college. And so, but now these guys are able to do so many things with the basketball. And I was just saying, you know what, if I would have been that guy in this era that spent 2 hours on just ball handling instead of shooting, where would my game have been? You know, would I have been able to do more things with the ball? And it's just so fun to watch these guys, how they take what we've done, the people in the past from Bill Russell to Will to all these guys up and taking it and tweaking it and making it their own. So it's fun to watch.
So the guy who's the epitome of that, of course, is Jokic, who by all accounts will be back-to-back MVP. That's not official yet as you and I record this. It might be by the time this publishes. Embiid is already kind of a little sulky about it. I get it. What do you think of Jokic's back-to-back MVP? I don't know who you had on your theoretical ballot, but but what do you think of Jokic repeating?
You know, don't get me wrong. Jokic is played awesome. I think Embiid should have won it last year and Jokic should have won it this year. You know, at first I said Embiid should have won it this year. Then I looked at the numbers and watched how Jokic carried that team with no Jamal Murray. I know I did, and the Philadelphia 76ers are trash without Embiid too. You know, but I just think, you know, when as much as I love Embiid, I thought he should have won it last year. I figured, okay, let's give it to him this year. You know, it's almost like that Steve Nash MVP. I'm like, okay, he had the same year he had last year. Why is he winning it again when Michael Jordan didn't do that? You know, he had to have an exceptional year for him to get it. But I think Embiid should have got it this year just for on the premises he didn't get it last year. But I just think Embiid I think it affected him in the next game because people don't understand every NBA player, every person is human. Things affect us. And when you have your heart set on something so bad and you don't get it when you really deserved it, it can mess with you mentally. I think it did with Embiid.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean, I thought, I don't know, I guess it's because of all the years you and I were around Shaq. Like, if Shaq gets snubbed, Shaq is going out to, like, kill somebody to prove that he should have gotten it. And Embiid, I think, you know, look, he's got a lot of qualities, I think, that actually are comparable to Shaq in some ways. Like, you know, big man who loves to have fun, but also can, you know, dominate you physically on the court, everything else. I would have expected, and listen, Rob, like, he's got the hand injury. He's got the broken, you know.
Arm with the bone.
Yeah, it's broken face, man. So I was kind of giving benefit of the doubt to the idea that maybe he just had other stuff going on. But you think, like, the MVP snub actually, like, messed with his head?
I think it's a combination of all of that, not just in the stub, but, you know, think about it. He hadn't played in, what was it, 7, 8, 9 days? And then he's played 2 back-to-back. It could have been fatigue, you know. And people always expect superstars to be super every night, especially in the playoffs. You know, you hear all these guys talk about it. Oh, and you could go down the line, but every guy who's an analyst who used to be a former player, they're going to have that one game, even though they're the superstars, that they had a bad game. And they're going to probably give us some excuse. I was sick this game. Well, why? Embiid has finger, eye, concussion, mad, because he got these 4 things that could implement how he had, and who knows what's going on at home. You know, his daughter or his child could have been sick or whatnot. So there's a lot of things that can affect you, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we have stuff that affects us that carries over into our jobs.
All fair. Do you think we get the MVP right most of the time? I mean, we get
nope.
this. All right. How often do we get it wrong? I mean, because this every time. So the last couple of years have been particularly contentious with the results and the backlash and the counter backlash and all this. And so we get this whole, well, maybe we need to rethink this whole thing, or maybe the players actually should be voting for it again, as they did way back in the day. Maybe the media is not the best body to be voted. Like, we get this. So what do we get wrong? What do you think? And if we don't get it right more often than not, what's the answer?
I think you should do 50-50, have 50. When I say 50-50, have X players to vote on it. Because those that watch the game and don't have the players voting, because think about it. If I'm the Dallas Mavericks, I'm voting for Luka. Everybody on that team is going to vote for Luka. Now, if you know, and I don't think that'll work out, because guys won't be honest. You know, they want their guy to get the shine. And I think a lot of these, you know, don't take offense to this, but the East Coast guys, they're in bed by the time the West Coast guys play.
You know? It's hard to stay awake.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, I felt like LeBron should have won it. We go back to where Kobe should have won it. We can always go all the way back where MJ played, Michael Jordan. He should have won it damn near every year he played. You know, it's so many times where the NBA was like, okay, we can't just keep giving it to Mike. Let's give it to somebody else. But then they roll into this one with Steve Nash and then Luka, and I'm like, okay, yeah. Yeah, and it's just, I think players, ex-players who still watch the game, they should have a panel of ex-players and say, hey, who you vote no? Because I don't think they should ever take reporters. Let's be honest. Ask 10 reporters to shoot 100 free throws, 10 each, and the percentage is going to probably be 20% out of those 10 guys. So they suck at basketball. So what the hell they know about basketball? You know, that'd be like me, you know, going out and, you know, not saying all of them, because there's some goods like you, Fred, that could probably, you know, go 10 for 10 from the 3-point line.
Not likely, to be honest. Not likely.
Yeah, but I just think it's not fair to the players when the reporters, because think about it, just like refs, reporters sometimes hold grudges against certain players, and I don't think they should vote on it.
A debate for us to have offline, otherwise it'll hijack the rest of this podcast. And I would say, like former players, I like that idea, Rob, because like current players, we've seen not just the obviously they're going to vote for their own teammate, but like they have a vote in All-Star voting now. They have like 25%, and they're all over the map. They're a disaster.
It's awful. I wouldn't let them do that either.
and this is why the NBA continues to throw it to us in the media, because like, coaches not going to be unbiased, executives, nope. Like there's really I like the idea. I've proposed, like, for certain things, I think, like, the idea of a blue ribbon panel, which would be like what you're saying, former coaches, former players,
yes.
Former whatever, guys who like don't have an investment in the game anymore, who could be objective about it, who know the game certainly at a much deeper level than I do. But I think, I mean, in our defense, without us hijacking the whole pod, Rob, I think we do a pretty decent job of
you do,
like, we take it seriously, and we spend a lot of time and a lot of thought on this, and I do think, even if you don't agree with the result, I would say on behalf of my peers,
I think for
we
you
put
guys
a lot of thought into it.
You put a lot of thought in it, but that's the problem. You put too much thought into it. You go to the analytical aspect. Well, you know, just take Jokic's numbers, for instance. This year his numbers were crazy, right?
Yeah,
but, you know, does numbers always mean MVP, you know? And that's the thing, because in that case, LeBron plays 2 more games, he becomes a scoring champ, and he should be MVP or something like that. I'm just throwing that out. Not that he should be MVP this year, but I'm saying numbers can can make people who are in that analytical mind screwed. Just like analytical basketball to me is so stupid, because everybody says, everybody who ever went to school know three is more than two, but that don't mean you're going to go out and shoot threes all day. Don't have a guy who can't shoot threes shoot 10 threes a game when he can score, you know, 9 for 10 in the paint. It's just so stupid to me, you know, and sometimes we let this analytical society in basketball and sports get in the way of how you look at a player's heart and his mind, his IQ, and it doesn't go boil down to analytics all the time.
Yeah, I mean, my issue with it, and I voted for Giannis this year over Jokic. My issue is just that I still think the winning part matters, like the history of MVP. Yeah, so, and it's not that the Bucks or Sixers had a lot more wins than the Nuggets, and Jokic was almost solely responsible for what success the Nuggets had, and I get all that, but the MVP in this league historically most of the time has come from a team that absolutely has a chance to make a deep run and possibly win the championship, and the Sixers and Bucks heading into the postseason, you thought, yeah, I could see those teams making a run for sure. Can the Nuggets make a run? No. And I'm not, nobody's surprised they lost in the first round. And I'm not saying that disqualifies Jokic after the fact. I'm saying before the fact, on my ballot, it means I can't put him at the top because I believe in this league.
Same here.
MVP comes from a viable team and a team that matters. And the Nuggets didn't matter.
I would love to know how many MVPs didn't make it to their conference finals. You know what I mean? That, you know, you have some that got swept or some other injury, but I would love to know what the percentage is on that. You know, and also, you know, go back to that. I don't understand how Devin Booker didn't get talked about for MVP. You know, they got the number one record in basketball. Nobody talking about him. Nobody's talking about CP3, you know, and, you know, think about this. Bridges, why does he win Defensive Player of the Year? Or why does he get most improved? It's like, think about it. The number one team in basketball. No, nobody on that team got any awards. That's ridiculous.
Monty Williams got Coach of the Year.
Oh, yeah. Coach of the Year.
So there's that.
Yeah. I'm talking about players, man. Yeah. Coaches don't matter.
All right. So,
I'm just kidding.
My son's explanation for you is this, Rob. I see them as kind of the modern day version of the Sacramento Kings teams you guys played back in the early 2000s, where it's an ensemble, right? Chris Webber was by far the most important element there, but he was never or very rarely integral to the MVP discussion because the Kings won as an ensemble. It was a little bit of Weber and Vlade and Peja and Bibby and all this. And I think Booker and CP3 and Ayton, that's kind of that same thing. And Bridges, like all those guys matter. And it's like Booker is not Giannis. Booker is not MVP, right?
True.
Like, and neither is Chris Paul. And so like they're, to me, they are more of that team that wins 60 plus games as an ensemble, not because of the overwhelming influence of one. Yeah. So, you know.
But, you know, I just want to point that out because it takes so many great things to make a great team.
For sure.
And, you know, and it starts with Monty. I think Monty is a hell of a coach. Monty was on the staff when we won the championship in 2005 with the Spurs. So he's just a great guy. He's learned from a lot of people. What I like about Monty is he's taken – you know, pieces and bits from a lot of coaches, you know, not like some coaches who'd be under a coach and like, okay, we're going to do exactly what he did, you know, because, you know, we've seen what, I ain't going to call no names out, a couple of coaches who studied under Pop, and when they get head coaching jobs, what they do. So it's almost like waterboard. Like, hold on, this is, okay, run this. Okay, let's run that.
Doesn't work for everybody exactly.
No, it doesn't.
Before we leave, I have a couple of quick playoff hits I wanted to do here. Ja Morant, all right, so he's out of the series because of the knee injury that may or may not have happened on the Jordan Poole play. I'm not going to concern myself with that part of it. But Ja gets hurt a lot. He plays this breakneck style. He's small for an NBA player, slight of build. He plays like he's the same things that make him so much fun to watch, that make him electrifying, are the things that make me go, ooh, man, I worry about this man's longevity because he's always attacking. And that's great. It's entertaining. It's successful for his team. I don't know. Rob, are you worried as I am about Ja's longevity, playing the style he plays, high flying, a lot of contact, a lot of, you know, falls to the court, and just a lot of like just weird twists and turns on that body.
Yeah, I worry about it all the time because when I look at him, he's like Allen Iverson and Derrick Rose mixed together. You know, the athleticism, the skinniness, the slight of build, but he's so fun to watch, and you want to see this. But as a lover of basketball, you want to see him out there more and cut back. And, you know, there's so many moments where you're like, why are you trying that? Why are you trying to dunk on someone? Shoot a floater in the paint like Tony Parker. You know, shoot a fadeaway like Steph Curry. Do so many things to take away from the bumps and bruises of the game. And I think that just comes with maturity. You watch, you know, Michael Jordan was the same way. Kobe was the same way. All these guys were going to the rack, trying to dunk on people, do the exciting play. And then you realize getting up off the ground so many times ain't favorable for you. So I think he will learn. And think about it, he should be a rookie this year because he should have been in college a little bit longer. He's still young. He's going to learn the game. He's going to be it's going to come to him. He's going to understand, hey, layup is just as good as a dunk, you know, and save those moments for when it really counts.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you pointed out, I mean, he's still young in his career. His game will evolve. He clearly loves the game and is somebody who wants to be great. And I think he will diversify it, and that'll allow him to maybe not play such a punishing style once he gets more tools in the bag.
And I think he'll get stronger too, because I just mentioned Steph. If you look at Steph's body when he won MVP to his body now, his body now is built for the long haul. That body then, it wasn't.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a great point too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Steph didn't have to take as much of a beating, but guys add strength as they mature naturally, and also I think probably guys realize you kind of need it at a certain point. Like even if you're a guard who's playing mostly on the perimeter and a shooter like Steph, like you take a beating in this league, right?
Well, you know how when I had to put on 15 pounds of muscles, that when they say, oh, we're going to officially move Rob to power four, I'm like, oh, hell no.
People forget you came in as a small forward.
Yes.
And then suddenly you get to Lakers and it's like, go guard Karl Malone and bang on him for 40 minutes. The other thing I remember about that back in the day, Rob, was because that was an era still where we had the old school prototype bruising power forwards, the Karl Malones of the world, Tim Duncan, everybody else that you had to deal with every year. People look at it now, they go, oh yeah, Robert Horry, that's the guy who like helped the Lakers win 3 championships. He's got 7 rings, all that stuff. They don't remember what I do, which is that every year talk radio in LA would be like, what are the Lakers going to do to finally show up that power forward position? We can't have Robert Horry start in 82 games.
I know. It's so funny how even when Phil first got there, like, am I going to be around? Is he going to get rid of me? Next thing you know, he's needing me in third and fourth in the fourth quarter. So that was one of the things that I was always unsure about, because everybody looked at what I did. And they looked around the league at other power forwards. We got Karl Malone averaging 20. We got Charles Barkley, Chris Webber. I'm like, dude, you don't need me to average 20 because Kobe and Shaq are averaging 30. So you just need someone to play good defense and keep those guys in line, you know, smack them around a little bit. So you need, and that's the thing about a lot of these guys now, you know, they do so much for teams, but they only look at the point production. They only look at the rebounds. You know, there's so many guys that are glued to a team, not just on the floor, in the locker room, and just keeping things lighthearted sometimes. I think, you know, you look at guys like myself, Ron Harper, B. Shaw, and Fish, and Rick, for the Lakers, that's who we were. You know, when they got rid of us, you was a reporter. You saw the turmoil. You saw the hate. You saw that stuff, going to the finals and getting beat. You know, that didn't happen when the rest of us were here. We, you know, we kind of kept it lighthearted and kept those guys together.
No question. You know what else has always hit me, Rob, about those teams? If you look around, so I actually made the list before we hopped on. The Lakers from that Shaq and Kobe era who have gone on to either be coaches or broadcasters, it's a long list. So, all right, so on TV, we got Shaq on TNT, of course. You're doing the Laker broadcasts out there for Spectrum in L.A. Derek Fisher has been on TV a bunch, is now obviously coaching and has coached in a couple different places. Rick Fox was on TV for a long time doing NBA TV and other stuff. Mark Madsen has been on NBA benches. Now he's a college head coach. Mike Penberthy is an assistant coach. Tyronn Lue, of course, coaching very well with the Clippers, won a championship with the Cavs. Luke Walton, Brian Shaw, coached the Nuggets for a while. Obviously now he's on Lue's staff. I think there's something to that, Rob. Like, I think when we talk about championship teams, we immediately talk about the superstars who led them. Then we might talk about the glue guys like you who were key to it. But if I go down this list that I just read of guys I covered on your teams in LA that have either been in broadcasting or coaching, like the common thread there is like you had a really smart team. Like you had guys who knew, who understood the game at a high level. It's not just that everybody's coasting on their rings and got these gigs because of it. Like I think that speaks to like the intelligence it takes to have a deep, effective roster around your stars.
You know, you have to have, you know, selfless guys who can sacrifice their games for the better of the team. And when you talk about the IQ and the smarts, there's so many moments where you want to go out and shoot the ball. And you're like, no, we need a better shot here. No, it's not the time. It's a funny story. I remember, you might not remember this. We played Phoenix one time in Phoenix, and I didn't get a shot one game, and I was pissed by that. So we go to Phoenix. I scored the first 11 points. And I was like, see, I can fucking score the ball, man. You better give me the ball sometime, right? But I ain't going to lie. After the first points I scored, I was like, it takes a lot of energy to score. I'm tired, man. So, but, you know, sometimes you have to let your teammates know. You're like, dude, I'm not just here for the pretty face and just, you know, have someone to go out here and play defense all the time. And you have to let them know. And that's the kind of team we had in the Lakers, that we could do stuff like that. But you're right. You have to have blue guys, because Rick was that guy, you know, in the locker room where he'll yell at Kobe or yell at Shaq, and they'd be looking at him like, is this dude crazy? Do he realize who we are? But we didn't care if they were the big dogs, because at the end of the day, we all human beings, we all men. So you have to handle it and be professional.
Was that a playoff series that you did score the first 11 against the Suns, or was that it's just a game?
It's regular season game, man. Right. You know.
I don't know if there are guys around who will yell at the stars anymore. Like coaches are afraid to do it. GMs are afraid to do it. I mean, maybe some of their teammates.
It's only two coaches I know, that's Pop and Spoelstra, that will yell at their top dog. You know, Spoelstra will go at you. You know, he said with Jimmy Buckets down there, like, hey, don't talk to me like that. But I think those are only two guys that maybe Thibodeau, maybe him.
Kerr's gone at Draymond. He doesn't have to go at Curry, because like Steph is like Duncan, like one of those easy superstars to coach, right? Or doesn't have, like, you don't need to get into it with him. But Kerr and Draymond have certainly had their moments.
Yeah. But that Draymond gets in with a puppy, man. Knowing him, he'll yell at a puppy.
So weird controversy this week. Rudy Gobert, not controversy, weird, just like middle of the playoff story out of nowhere. Rudy Gobert, I could lock up Shaq, which is the most like preposterous thing I've ever heard in my life. Is there a single center that you've seen in recent years, Rob, that you think, not that anybody could lock up Shaq, who would actually have a chance to at least have a respectable showing against prime Shaq? Could Embiid do it? Could Jokic? Is there somebody else?
Embiid would be, you know, he might be the only guy. Jokic, he can't jump, so he couldn't handle Shaq. And, you know, he'd get him on the other end by bringing Shaq out. But I don't think anybody, man. You know, 1999, 2000 Shaq, when he was in shape and he was scared of field, so he, you know, he was playing like a beast. And that Shaq was amazing, man. So I don't think anybody could guard him. You know, I just watch guys who tried. With a lot of, you know, think about it. You had the Yaos, you had the Sabonises, you had Vlade, you had all these guys that were strong enough and big enough, you know, but, you know, Ostertags, I don't think anybody could, man. The only person that could stop Shaq was himself.
Exactly. And we kind of knew it at the time. He only won the one MVP. We talked about MVP earlier. Should Shaq have won more MVPs? Was there a season where you thought we screwed it up and it should have been him?
No, I don't. You know, I think maybe another season. I think he should have got two while he was with the Lakers. But that's about it, because I think I'm not saying that he shouldn't deserve, I just think some guys had exceptional years.
Yeah.
And so I think Shaq should have won two. I should think Kobe should have won way more than he did. He only won one, right?
Only won the one. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, look, a lot of that was because he spent all those prime years with Shaq. Right. And after Shaq's gone, then the Lakers have some really shitty years. Yeah. Then they get Powell, and they're winning again. But yeah, that was where, you know, whatever. There's the one year where was it 06 when Nash won, and a lot of people thought Kobe should have won, but the Lakers' record wasn't that great.
Yeah.
It's murky in that period of time.
But you know, that's always a great debate though, when you talk about the value of a player. Do you think, you know, we talk about MVP, not MVP on a great team. You know, we talk about that, but sometimes there should be exceptions. Think about it. Westbrook got MVP and they weren't that good, but he averaged a triple-double. He was exceptional. So, but I think sometimes there's always an exception to the rule.
Yeah. I didn't vote for Westbrook that year either. I voted for Harden. I don't vote for guys on sub-50 win teams.
But you know, with Harden though, it's like I always I love Harden as a player, but at those times, I'm going back and look at you on the defensive end like, dude, come on, man. Basketball, you play. I hate, you know, let me put this out there. When they say two-way player, I hate that term because basketball players are basketball players. There's no two-way. Either you're going to play defense or you're going to play offense. They don't call defensive players, you know, oh, he's a two-way player. He only played defense, not offense. That term is the most – it's the stupidest term ever. This is not football. Football is the only sport that should be called a two-way player because they have a specific defense and they have a specific offense, teams that come onto the field. So the term two-way player is the stupidest term, and I wish people will stop using it. He's a good player. He's not a good player. Good defensive player, not a good defensive player.
So yeah. if you're averaging 32 points, you're supposed to still actually go play defense also?
Yes!
That's a novel concept.
Kobe no, did it. I mean, MJ did it.
by definition, you're right. If you were out there on the court in a jersey as part of the five-man unit, you are obligated to I don't know. You're not obligated to play defense. You are a defender of sorts just by being on the court, I guess. Yeah. That's a fair point. Winding down here, I got to hit a couple of these real quick with you. You have your virtual background up for people who are watching on YouTube. They can see it. If you're just listening, you cannot. But there is just a series of Robert Ory's behind Robert Ory in panel form, Rockets jersey, Lakers jersey, Spurs jersey, yes. Hitting all of your clutch shots in the postseason. What's your favorite, like, not necessarily your favorite behind you, but like, what was your favorite clutch shot? Because you hit a ton of them.
Yeah, my favorite clutch moment is 2005, the second half. But my clutch shot has to be the Western Conference, you know, against the Sacramento Queens, the Shaqs like to call them, you know. And because it
2002.
Yes, 2002. It happened with no time left on the clock. So you know you won. And it happened at home. That makes it so special, because even though you hate this, you love to see fans on the road and they all crying and like, oh, making the faces, but you love on a personal note to do it in front of your fans, and more important, hit them and chant your name, because, you know, playing with Shaq and Kobe, you get many chances to hear fans chant your name. So for me to hit that shot of against Sacramento, it was so special for me. And even now when they show that overhead shot,
yeah,
I still get goosebumps, man, when I see that, man, because for me, growing up a Laker fan, and to be able to do that in a Laker uniform in front of the Laker crowd was, you know, outside of winning championships and having kids, that's right there in the top three.
I don't have a great, like, photographic memory for these things, Rob, but I've got to believe the two loudest moments during that three-peat were your shot against the Kings and the Shaq Kobe lob, the Kobe to Shaq lob in 2000 against the Blazers. Like, the two times where I just remember the place just fucking exploding, absolutely just coming unglued. And it's not that they wouldn't have celebrated, you know, the championship, because the first championship in 2000 was won on the home court at Staples. The next two were both on the road, right? In Philly and in New Jersey. I'm sure it was.
Ain't that
loud.
Crazy though? Ain't that
it,
like,
it is.
I didn't even think about it until you just mentioned it.
yeah. Only one of the three was won at home. But that's just, you know, the Nets one was a sweep, so they won it. You know, Game Four was in New Jersey, and you guys always had home court. And the Philly one, that was the 2-3-2 format, right? But you lost Game One.
Yeah.
And then won the next four in a row, so it was still in Philly. But yeah, those were loud, incredibly loud moments. What I always, I've probably told you this, what I always remember from your shot against the Kings, not just that it was obviously an amazing shot, Rob, and a hugely important one besides, it's that afterward, Vlade gets up on the podium, because Vlade was the dumb fool who tapped it out after Kobe misses and Shaq misses. Vlade taps it out thinking time's going to expire, but he taps it right to your hands at the arc, and you're like, oh, look, the ball. I guess I'll shoot it. Vlade gets up on the podium afterward and says, it's luck shot. Anyone can hit that shot. And so then you come in a few minutes later at the podium, and I think it was Scott Howard Cooper from the LA Times. If people play the clip on YouTube, you can find it, who says to you, Vlade called it a luck shot. Do you remember what your response was?
That ain't no luck shot. I've been doing all my career. You better read a paper or something.
Yes.
Because I was going to say, you better watch ESPN at the time. ESPN had did this report on somebody else that I was mad about. So I didn't want to give them no love. So I had said, you know, it was funny, but because they had, you know, it was funny. It's, I don't even remember what it was about, but I was just mad at ESPN. I said, you better watch ESPN or something. But I didn't say that. So I said, you better read a paper or something.
And that's why I love you, Rob, because in that moment I was like, damn, that is the best endorsement for newspapers. I was at the LA Daily News at the time. Of course, I spent most of my career in newspapers. I was like, the newspaper industry should have like clipped that and played that as like our an endorsement, right? Like,
I know. I should have been on the front of the LA Times or whatever what paper it was. Like, yo, Robert endorses papers.
We needed it. Newspapers, mm-hmm. Newspapers were already on hard times then, more so now. But that was one of my favorite all-time exchanges too. Just and you guys are the Kings. There was always something. It was either Shaq calling them the Queens, which wouldn't go over as well in 2022. Maybe didn't go over as well or that well then either. But there was always a lot of shit talk. Phil's talking trash about them, putting clips of Rick Adelman in the film sessions that they didn't appreciate when they heard about it. There was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of stuff.
The cowbell town, you know, that was the worst one.
Cowtown, yeah.
And Shaq mooning everybody after we win game 7 in their building. You know, so many things, you know, people, and we were rolling into the bus. A lot of people know that we came in, the fans were throwing stuff out, going to game 7, rocking the bus. And then on the way out, we all like mooning them and stuff. You know, so it's too bad. This is a love and a love and a hate relationship. It's like, you wish you'd have had cell phone cameras back then, but then again, you wish you didn't, because there's so many things that we wish we had on tape, on film, that was so much fun. So I'd have loved to see, you know, Shaq mooning the fans as we left Arco.
Could you imagine? And it would have been the Kings fans. Like, there would have been like 50 people out there all taping it who would have all just had like a shot of like Shaq's bare ass. That is not a pleasant image to end this on. Speaking of which, I cannot let you go without this one. I got to pull one more from back in the day. I remember us having this conversation, might have been in Philly one year or whatever, where, because we were talking about trophy presentations and everything, and you were creeped out by the fact that when guys win it all, they're going and they're kissing the trophy in any sport. What is your phobia of guys kissing the trophy?
Hey, man, I don't know where your mouth been or where that trophy been, what's going on in the back, what been walking on it or crawling on it. You know, I'm not a germaphobe, but, you know, especially with this day and age with COVID and guys would kiss the trophy. You think about hockey, they put beer and drink out of it. I'm like, anybody got backwash and all this kind of stuff? I'm like, no, I ain't doing all that, man. But it's just weird how guys, you know, that and the thing with Steve Nash and Shaq are the two guys I think when they put their hands in their mouth and lick their fingers, I'm like, oh, that's just so much nastiness going on. And guys, you know, spitting on the floor. And then there's so many things that's just unsanitary, man. I can never kiss the trophy. I do it like this, you know, put my hand, kiss my hand, make it look like I kissed the trophy.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm with you on this one, actually. Like, it's a little like, it's a nice image. I get it. It looks good for the cameras and you're just so happy in the moment and everything, ecstatic. But like, yeah, man, you don't know where that trophy's been. And other guys have been, you know, you don't know where the people's mouths have been. I'm with you. The Stanley Cup thing, like, they should just end that practice. I don't know if they have ended that practice, but they, in the COVID era, maybe the beer kills the germs. I don't know.
Maybe they add some vodka, maybe, but no. And it's the same trophy. You go from one team to the next, to the next, to the next. You don't know what this guy did to that trophy when he had it in his possession.
Somebody should do a story on this. I imagine they must have some sort of sterilization process between at least in the off years, right?
Before they better.
Before they pack that thing away.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rob, this has been a blast. Appreciate you spending the time. Folks, if you haven't already, go subscribe to the NBA Finals File podcast series. Watch Rob on TV on Spectrum, where he hangs out with Big Game James and Mike Bresnahan, who somehow convinced people that he's a TV personality instead of a newspaper reporter.
I know, right?
No, you guys got a great crew there. It's a lot of fun. This has been a blast, Rob. Anywhere else they should be seeing, listening, your work?
I have the Big Shot Bob podcast also. I got the B-Dog, Brandon Harper, and Rob Jenners. I kind of slid into Shaq's spot from that since Shaq left and went over back to do his podcast on another station. But you know what? I'm a little mad at you, man.
How so?
I just had a feeling that you was going to ask me about, you know, clutch players, and you didn't even ask me about that.
Ah, that's right. I did. Before we go, this is the problem. I was so overprepared. I texted you a question that I said, I think I'm going to ask you for your top five clutch players of all time, because since you're big shot, Rob. And then we got carried away with all this other stuff. All right, before I let you go, Robert Horry's top five, because you did your homework. And then I didn't
ask this question all the time. So I have my right. I have my top five. And all I don't right. put and I don't put myself in it, because I should be at the top of the list, because all these other guys I'm gonna name are guys who actually had plays run for them and they had the ball throughout the series or throughout a game. You know, for me, you know, I didn't get that a lot of times. It's like, oh, we're gonna go through a game, play 40 minutes, and you know, give Robert two shots. Okay, we're end of the game. Let's give Robert a shot, come through for us. And it's a difference, man. It's a whole difference than that, you know. So,
or it comes to you by accident, as it did when Vlade tapped it out to you. It wasn't like Shaq was hitting you. It was like the opposing center had to. All right, your top five, not counting yourself.
Michael Jordan. If you don't agree with anybody, you know, let me know. Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
Ray Allen. Steph Curry. And this guy right here is probably number one. Damian Lillard.
Wow.
And people are going to say, Damian Lillard, he hasn't won anything. But Damian Lillard has hit more – he has hit a clutch shot versus every team in the NBA. Think about that. Every team within, you know, the last minute or so of a game, he's come through with a clutch shot, even though he get a lot of shots during the game. But Damian Lillard is on my list. You know, and you know Reggie Miller some days. I might slide Reggie in there, you know. But it varies from day to day. But those are my top six.
Yeah, listen, to the top sixth one being, of course, yourself. the sixth was Reggie, I guess. Yeah. No, I inarguable on any of those. And it's funny, Rob, because we have all of these stats now where you can now go and sort by last minute, last 2 minutes, 5 minutes, scores within two, scores within five, whatever. So we can quantify. That's how you know that Dame Lillard's hit a clutch shot against every team, because we have the tools to generate those stats. We didn't have that back in the day. Like, I'm sure somebody has cataloged all of Michael's clutch shots, Kobe's clutch shots.
Some Fred has done that because they got nothing else to do.
Some Fred who's got a lot more skills with the spreadsheet than I do, because that ain't me. I'm sure somebody has, but like we can actually quantify it and appreciate it now in a different way, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, I don't think you need to have won a championship to be an all-time great clutch shooter. We know that Dame has hit some incredible shots. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can't disagree with anybody on your list, and Steph for sure.
But you know, it's an interesting fact too, though, where they do have, we're talking about stats, how they had one with, I think it was Kobe and LeBron, how they missed more clutch shots than they made. And it's like three times more the misses than it makes. And it's a ridiculous stat. So I don't quote me on that, but I'm trying to call from memory, but you know, I've been hitting the head too many times. I don't remember stuff that I used to. So,
but that's the one thing too, though. We almost have too much data with this one. I know you're going in against analytics earlier. I actually appreciate a lot of the analytics, but there are times when it is, I think, sometimes misapplied, and clutch shooting is one of them, because okay, yes, Kobe and probably LeBron maybe missed a lot more than they made, but some of that's situational in that you're in those situations a lot or in big moments a lot, and those are the ones we pay attention to.
Yeah.
You have to be one who was willing to take those shots and have the ability to make them and to create space a lot of the time too, because a lot of that is nobody else could have gotten the shot off except that guy.
It's so true. Yeah.
And that's Kobe to a T. It's like, okay, the percentage might not be great in clutch situations, but nobody else was going to be able to even get off a shot. And so it gets a little murky again.
Yeah, it gets real murky, because you think about a lot of those clutch shots too, they run the play for and they expect them to have the athleticism and the greatness to take a shot with 0.3 and make it count. You know what I'm going with that 0.3?
Was it 0.3 or 0.4?
Oh, is it 0.3 or 0.4 with fish shot that
fish
shouldn't count?
Yeah. That's another one. That's another all timer. Like I've had the good fortune of being present for some really amazing moments.
You know that shit didn't count. You know that didn't count. You know it didn't count.
You're saying the start of the clock too late, as the Spurs fans were claiming?
No, it couldn't have counted, man. You're breaking it down. You cannot catch and turn and shoot in 0.4 seconds. It's impossible.
He did, though.
Yeah, you're right.
And then he ran straight the hell off the court. Do you remember that? Ran off the court because he was like,
I knew the play, and I was like telling Pop, I said, no, they're going to run this. He said, I don't want Kobe to catch it. I said, all right, you the boss. And I didn't let Kobe catch, and right where the spot I left, Fish ran right to where I came, turned around and caught it and shot.
And then he ran off the court because he didn't want to give anybody time to replay it or try to wave it off or try to restart the game or anything else. I'm out. I'm done. That's it. we're running way too long, but my story about that one, Rob, is that so that's the year that you had left. You'd gone to San Antonio, right? So you unfortunately on the losing end of that. Karl Malone and Gary Payton are with the Lakers. You guys, the Spurs should have won that series. You had won the first two games of the series. You're up 2-0. The Lakers are coming apart at the seams. Shaq and Kobe want nothing to do with each other. Gary Payton is sniping at Phil. Karl Malone is all banged up. Like the bench is falling apart. And I knew as soon as the Lakers were out that I was going to fly to New York for my 2-day of interview with the New York Times. I had talked to them earlier in the season, and they said, as soon as the Lakers are out, come talk to us. But I knew they wanted to hire me, but I couldn't go and do the formal interview until the Lakers were done. And they said, don't worry, we're waiting. Like, it's not urgent. I'm like, okay. But it's in the back of my mind. Like, I've got all this, like, I'm anxious about it. I'm excited about it. I'm like, I'm going to move possibly 3,000 miles and work for, like, the most prestigious newspaper in the country.
Yes.
My whole life is about to change possibly, but it can't happen until the freaking Lakers lose. And so they're up. You guys are up 2-0. And I'm like, all right, I'm halfway there. Did Lakers just have to lose two more games? I can fly to New York, go interview with the Times. And because it was hanging over me. Lakers have to go win the next four in a row. And then they go to the finals. So that's another month tacked on before I could finally go interview with the Times. But, you know, the Lakers eventually lose that series to Detroit. I do go interview with the Times. I did get hired. My whole life changed. I'm still in New York here 18 years later.
I'm sorry you didn't get there a month sooner.
I blame you.
I take the blame for that. I take the blame. My bad.
It's because that was the one where you had the shot that went down, that was in the cylinder and somehow popped back up, right? Wasn't that series?
No, that was the first game that Lakers, I played against the Lakers without being in a Laker uniform.
It's a regular season game. Okay.
Yeah, it's regular. And the funny part, in the same spot that cost me $6 million because I shot the ball so poorly in the previous year in the playoffs that's why the Lakers got rid of him, in my opinion. You know, it might have been because I was going to make $6 million and they thought I was going to be overpaid, so I don't know.
See, it's all a blur. I just knew it was a game at the Alamo Dome or AT&T Center or whatever the hell they were calling it at that time. And I do remember, I could picture the spot of the floor where you shot that and where it popped out.
It's a funny story. I know you're running long, but this is funny. On that shot, we talked about that miss. Karl Malone is guarding me, and Kobe comes over and tells Karl Malone, "Don't leave Rob." He's Karl. Okay, no, you don't understand what I'm saying. Don't leave Rob. Okay. No, listen to me. Don't leave Rob. And then I missed the shot. He goes, did I tell you not to leave Rob? Lucky he missed it. So it's the funniest story ever. But, you know, that was the thing about Kobe. You know, we miss him. We love him so much. But the guy was a competitor.
No doubt. No doubt. And, man, takes a lot to be yelling at Karl Malone that many times, too. I got Karl Malone stories for another day. But, Rob, this has been a blast, man. Thanks for hanging out. This has been fun. Go listen to his pods. There's like 17 of them. He's like king of all media. Robert Horry, thanks, man.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Love you, my brother, man. See you soon, hopefully.
You too.
All right.
Take care. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Robert Horry. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.